The U.S. and Canada have struck a deal to replace NAFTA. Talks went down to the wire late on Sunday. However, Canada has agreed to join what's being called the USMCA, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement. It beats a midnight deadline U.S. President Donald Trump had set for Canada to sign on, and ends more than a year of negotiations.
Bagpipes at dawn marking the one-year anniversary Monday of the Las Vegas shooting, which killed 58 people and injured hundreds more. On Monday, President Trump was asked what his administration has done to prevent the next shooting. He asserted that a ban on bump stocks, the kind of device Paddock used to turn his semi-automatic rifles into machine guns, was imminent.
Poland has a record apple harvest, and growers aren't happy about it. A projected 4.5 million tons of the fruit looks certain to mean oversupply. That's driving prices down to a level where they don't cover production costs. Poland used to sell 1 million tons of apples to Russia every year. But Moscow has banned imports in retaliation for EU sanctions over its annexation of Crimea.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's October the 2nd, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us with another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. We appreciate you tuning in. We've got a good broadcast for you today. A little bit later in the program, we'll have the founder of the Independent Drivers Guild, machinist union that is trying to organize and support app-based drivers like Uber and Lyft and Juno. We'll talk about that organizing effort a little bit later in the morning at about 5:40 this morning. Also today, a little bit of news about global ad trends that we'll get into, and that's a for our broadcast today, pretty good. We have also the intel from around the globe, all the news from the business world this morning, numbers momentarily as well. Here we go on another edition of The Opening Bell. First, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk numbers. Futures are pointing toward opening losses a little bit later on Wall Street, with Dow futures off about 92 points right now. S&P futures are lower by about a third. NASDAQ futures are lower by about 0.5%. And around the rest of the globe this morning, markets are generally in the red in Europe, with the numbers in London off by about 0.5% or more, in Germany by almost 3/4, and in France by more than 1%. In Asia, the Nikkei is going to end the day up just a fraction. The Hang Seng is down about 662 points. That's more than 2.3%. And the Shanghai is up about 29 points, about 1%. Oil is trading at $75.34 a barrel, which is up about 4 cents. A couple of big stories before we begin this morning. International Monetary Fund Chief Christine Lagarde delivered a warning on global growth this morning, saying there are signs major economies like the U.S. have plateaued. She, in part, is blaming global trade woes for the slowdown. For the most countries, she says, it's become more difficult to deliver the promise of greater prosperity because of the global economic weather is beginning to change. In prepared remarks in a speech in Washington, D.C., she said that compared to a year ago when everything looked rosy, it is now not so much because of some of these trade issues. Lagarde says while the IMF forecast of 3.9% global growth for 2018 and 2019 continues, she says there is a bleaker outlook moving forward. Another story that we're watching this morning, another bleak assessment coming from credit ratings agency Moody's, has warned that Europe remains highly vulnerable to another downturn despite all of its firefighting efforts over the past few years. In a wide-ranging report, Moody's says Europe is not ready to cope with another major slump, stressing the financial system, and notes the vulnerabilities that could deepen the impact in Europe of the next downturn, including debt levels, higher debt levels, peaking assets, prices, and regulatory risks. On the trade front today, President Trump hailing a revamped North American trade agreement with Canada and Mexico as a breakthrough for U.S. workers, vowing to sign it by late November. It still faces a lengthy path to congressional approval, though. The president notes that the agreement would need to be ratified by Congress, a step that could be affected by the outcome of the fall elections, as Democrats try to regain the majorities in the House and Senate. The president is branding the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, which Canadians joined just before a Sunday midnight deadline, as USMCA. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says his country is in a more stable place now that it has completed these negotiations. Canada, he says, got the right deal. We got a win-win for all of the countries. General Electric ousted its CEO, took a $23 billion charge, and said it would fall short of profit forecasts this year. Further signs that the century-old industrial conglomerate is struggling to turn around its vastly shrunken business. H. Lawrence Culp Jr. will take over immediately as chairman and CEO from John Flannery, who had been on the job for just over a year. Flannery began a restructuring of GE in August of 2017 when he replaced Jeffrey Immelt, whose efforts to create a higher-tech version of GE proved unsuccessful. In Flannery's short time, GE's value has dipped below $100 billion in shares, are more than 35 cents, down more than 35 cents this year, following a 45% decline in 2017. The U.S. Supreme Court will not review an Obama-era action that put land around the Grand Canyon off limits to new mining claims, ending the legal battle as environmentalists keep a close eye on actions of the Trump administration that they fear could lead to more access for the mining industry. The Obama administration put nearly 1,500 square miles outside of the boundaries of the national park, outside of the national park, off limits to new hard rock mining claims until 2013. Billionaire Seattle Seahawks owner and Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen says cancer he was treated for in 2009 has returned. Allen on Twitter yesterday said that he had recently learned of the non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and plans to fight it aggressively. As we move along this morning, sponsorship is the second fastest growing means of advertising. But how do companies measure the return on their money? And we're focusing specifically here on sports. We thought we'd bring in James McDonald this morning, data editor and author of WARC's Global Ad Trends Report. James, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Morning, Steve. Great to be with you.
So we are talking about sports when we say sponsorship is the second fastest growing means of advertising. Give us a sense of what the picture looks like here.
Okay, yeah. So the vast majority of sponsorship money is going on sports properties. Examples of this, for example, the NBA, which is attracting just over $1 billion this year, NFL $1.3 billion, NHL around $560 million, and baseball close to $900 million. So we're talking big money here. The appeal to brands to be associated with the people's favorite sports teams is frankly it's that kind of association and driving awareness of that brand. But the climate they're operating in at the moment, there's still a lot of issues around advertising. It's seen as quite an obtrusive medium. In fact, Brian Lesser, who's a CEO of ATT Advertising Marketing Area, he's recently that, you know, he echoed those sentiments that advertising is an intrusive medium. And what sponsorship allows brands to do is associate with things that people are interested in without getting in the way of that, you know? Sports offers a large, engaged, multi-channel audience, ever-increasing, and brands want to be seen on that jersey.
Yeah, and so what we're talking about here is exactly that. We see the, for instance, the Nike swoosh on a jersey or on a helmet or something like that is what we're referring to here, right?
Right, right, exactly. I mean, in a wider sense, we have kind of, we're discussing partnerships with things like the Olympics and the FIFA World Cup. The jersey sponsorship is a big part of it, certainly.
The you mentioned the World Cup. That's one of the big, where some of the big money's going. That and the Olympics. Talk about how much money there.
Right, so we estimate $1.7 billion was spent sponsoring the FIFA World Cup this year. Interestingly, with this year's tournament, after the FIFA bribery scandal, a lot of big companies, a lot of big brands moved out of that sponsorship deal. And what we saw was a lot of Asian companies, Wonder Group, Vivo, Hisense, spinning in that void. About a quarter of a billion Chinese people watch World Cup soccer every 4 years, and this despite China not being fielding a team in the tournament. So it's major business out there, and Asian brands specifically this year were definitely a big presence in the Russia World Cup. Revenues are continuing to grow, and will continue to do so, as with the Olympics as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the revenue is going to grow there. Are there any forecasts for what we might see in the coming years?
Well, for sponsorship as a whole, we're expecting growth of 4.9% this year. That's ahead of almost all traditional media, advertising mediums, other than internet formats. And that growth has been consistent over the last 10 years since the financial crash, and there's no real sign of that abating. So evidently it's working for advertisers.
How much is social media a part of this, James?
Well, social acts as a kind of an ancillary format for amplifying the campaigns, you know, creating buzz around a certain sponsorship partnership, measuring the interest within that sponsorship. So it really plays a supporting role, and a lot of brands are finding that crucial to activate their sponsorships.
As we kind of gauge how you know, how successful this is for a company, how do we know what the return on money is here for some of these companies that are doing these sponsorships? Are they confident they're getting the most bang for their buck?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, improving ROI is the holy grail, really, for any kind of advertising campaign. The way sponsorships operate, they kind of fit into the upper part of the marketing and sales funnel, generating brand awareness. And that's not easy to correlate the brand awareness that's generated by these campaigns with actual ROI. Something like sales uplift would be far easier. So that's why we see that only one in five marketers who undertake sponsorship campaigns are actually confident they can prove the ROI from those campaigns. It's really about generating awareness and a positive association of the brand, as opposed to directly linking that to sales at the moment.
Yeah, I would imagine one of the best examples of this so far, and it's happening in real time as we're speaking, is the deal with Colin Kaepernick here in the States with Nike. That seemed to be a huge win for them.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's a guy who a lot of people are talking about. It was an interesting move by Nike, but obviously one that was very calculated and considered, and now they're seeing the results of that.
Yeah, I saw that one report said that perhaps 61% increase in sales of some of the Nike products since they announced that. That's probably rare that you get to see that kind of effect, isn't it?
I'd say it is, yes. And I'd say someone at Nike is probably getting a promotion right now as a result of that decision. It's not every day that the results like that could come through. There's a lot of viral buzz around him as a person and a professional, and the brand have done well to kind of harness that.
What are some of the other takeaways from this report, James?
Generally, sports are really core here, and you're right to pick up on that, Steve, because while media is kind of fragmenting the way people consume media and watch different channels, that's really been to the benefit of sports, which has an engaged audience. And the more ways to watch live sport or highlight packages, the more people become engaged with that content. That's something that we don't see with a lot of other interest groups. So I think that is really a driving force behind sponsorships. And I think something that it may over time evolve into is more sponsorships of esports. We're still quite nascent by comparison of the established kind of NFL and NBA and such. But, you know, we see sponsorships cropping up by the day. Doritos have just partnered with a big esports team recently. And that's an area, a growth area. So what, as an overriding thing, this is what we found is just brands associating with content that people like and enabling that as opposed to standing in the way of it.
Yeah, and I know we've been focusing a lot here on sport. I guess one of the other questions I have for you is can any of this be extrapolated out to any of the other industries that do advertising? You mentioned the Doritos folks there. For larger corporations as a whole?
I mean, other areas festivals and arts. You know, here in the UK, we have very large music festivals, Glastonbury and such, and these are areas where we have, again, a very passionate and engaged audience which sponsors are leveraging. So it's really about finding the kind of content that people like and associating yourself with that. The sky's the limit in that regard.
All right. James, good information. We appreciate you joining us this morning. Thank you.
Great to be with you. Have a great day.
You too. James McDonald, the data editor and author of Works Global Ad Trends Report. We'll link out to that in our podcast of the program a little bit later this morning at WGNRadio.com.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's In a Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Groupon has agreed to pay IBM $57 million to settle a patent dispute. Groupon was accused of infringing on IBM's patents related to a single sign-on function. IBM was seeking up to $167 million in damages. Grubhub announced the launch of Donate the Change, a new feature that allows diners to support organizations that help those in need. Users who are ordering online or through the Grubhub app will be able to round their order total to the nearest dollar to support organizations like No Kid Hungry. And Chicago startup Project 44 has raised $45 million in new venture funding. The startup's logistics software helps companies track their shipments and communicate with the supply chain in real time. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. The Independent Drivers Guild is a machinist union affiliate and represents about 65,000 for-hire vehicle drivers in New York City. It bills itself as the first nonprofit labor organization to negotiate with rideshare companies, the first also to offer some protections that you might see with unions benefiting some of these workers. And we're happy to have Jim Conigliaro with us this morning to talk a little bit about this. Jim, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So let's talk a little bit about IDG. It makes sense that an organization like this exists. What is your mission here? What's your goal?
Yeah, I think the problem we came to, in New York at least, is that, you know, most of these drivers are labeled independent contractors, and that's the business model. But, you know, under federal laws, they can't join traditional unions. They've been stopped from joining traditional unions. And so the only thing they could do is come together in an organization, and in this case, a nonprofit organization. So we can just bring drivers together under one roof and just tell their stories, advocate for them, and get their stories out about their struggles and their desires in the industry.
It's important to recognize that line that you just mentioned there. It seems sort of like a blurry line, doesn't it? And if workers are able to join a group like yours but not a union, it seems like they can walk right up to the line there, right?
Yeah, I mean, so good parts and bad parts about that. It's being an independent contractor completely unregulated. That's both on, you know, the business side of things and on the labor side of things. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's a lot of things that they can do. They're not restricted in any way in kind of labor organizing, but it does have a few more negatives than it has positives, unfortunately.
I mentioned there that you have been able to organize some folks to come to your organization. Mm-hmm. How is that? How have you been doing that, and what kinds of people have been joining, and how have you been helping them?
Yeah, I mean, so in New York City, these are traditional full-time drivers. So a lot of drivers were here before Uber, before Lyft, and you know, the Machinist Union was organizing these drivers for a long time, the last 20 years. So we were lucky enough to have a foothold on the industry. But you know what? Other than that, it's really traditional work. It's canvassing. It's a lot of people at airports, a lot of meetings at right in front of the Uber offices, and then a lot of technology. You know, technology has helped labor as well. There's a lot of text messaging. There's a lot of emails, Facebook groups. So we've been lucky in that regard to have this group of people and drivers that are really, you know, tech savvy, that can reach out to us and organize, you know, digitally.
One of the big successes early on was with tipping. Explain how you were able to help some of these drivers with tipping in New York.
Yeah, so New York City is unique that we have a regulatory body that looks after its drivers and the industry. And a lot of cities don't have that. It's, you know, typically done by their city councils or no one sometimes. And so in New York City, we have this regulatory body where we found a kind of a law written a long time ago that you can petition this regulatory body to create a rule. And the rule we wanted was to allow tips to be given on the Uber platform. If you remember, if Uber used to say, if you wanted a tip, you can give it in cash. you know, as our times changed. People don't carry cash anymore. And so, you know, this was a really small ask, we thought, but the companies refused to do it. So we went through our process in New York City, and, you know, it turned into the first rule in the country, and eventually led to Uber and Lyft providing tips on the platform across the country, which is diverted millions of dollars back to drivers' pockets.
One of the other things that you're fighting on, too, now, one of the other issues is being able to opt out of Uber Pool. Explain to us what's going on there.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a... You know, we said they're independent contractors, but there's a lot of requirements, and they're under the rules. And it's doing these group rides where you have multiple people in your car at the same time. And the rides are cheaper, and they're harder for drivers to do. You have to deal with multiple passengers in the car that might not get along. And so it's different work. And so all we wanted was drivers to have a choice. But really, all these things are just, you know, smaller victories in light of the bigger one that we're really trying to get. That'll be coming up next week in New York City, which is minimum pay. And so we have a minimum wage protection bill in front of the Taxi Limousine Commission in New York City. And if that goes through, drivers will get a 22.5% raise and a guaranteed minimum wage, which would be the first one in the country that'll set a minimum wage. And we hope that'll be a kind of a blueprint for cities and states across the country.
Yeah, and that's the reason we're speaking with you today, the big reason we're speaking with you, because really, as New York is the biggest operator, biggest city for Uber and Lyft, obviously because of its size, the rest of the country, cities like Chicago, are watching what happens there to, as you mentioned, put that blueprint in place in other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's exciting. I mean, I think you have places like Chicago, Los Angeles, Seattle, some of the more heavily populated areas where, you know, these drivers are typically driving full time. You know, it's not like in some parts of the company, it might actually be ride sharing, somebody sharing their car. But, you know, in certain parts of the country, these are people that are driving full time. They're struggling to survive. You know, a J.P. Morgan study came out last week that said, you know, drivers in the sector and transportation sectors, wages are down 53% in the last 5 years. And so we have to watch that. We have to watch and to make sure these companies don't take advantage of the people living in our communities.
And there's something else on the horizon, too. I know we've reported on this program about how cities like New York and Chicago, New York especially, may be considering limiting the number of these ride-sharing cars that get to be in highly populated, areas like Manhattan, downtown Chicago, other big cities. So that's on the horizon as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a complicated issue because, at least in New York, the congestion, I'm sure in other cities, the congestion is awful. And it's how do we deal with it, you know? And you want to be careful because you don't want to create another medallion-type system like we have in taxis that, you know, force these inflated prices and then the drop in price that led to a lot of drivers struggling. So you want to limit it in some way. But you want to be careful the system that you create because, it might not work at the end. So it is a complicated issue. But, you know, in New York, you're right. We were lucky enough to at least hit the pause button. So we have, look, there's no more cars on the road. Let's figure out what the best route to take is.
You know, I mentioned, Jim, how New York as goes New York sometimes goes the rest of the country and other big cities. is there an organization like yours that would be replicated in other big cities like Chicago, or are you looking to perhaps represent folks all over the country?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're looking to lend a hand. I mean, it's really tough to organize resources-wise across the country. But, we're partnering with a lot of local groups, and we're trying to show them what we're doing here in New York City to show them a way. And of course, we're always gathering signatures on our website, drivingguild.org, from other cities and states to see where the most drivers that need help are. But, yeah, we'd love to expand. We're constantly looking for partners in other cities and states that we can lend a hand to.
People are probably listening, maybe even some Uber and Lyft drivers right now, saying, okay, unions generally require me to pay something in return. Are there dues? Yeah. What does the driver contribute in return?
There's different levels of membership. I think, you know, at first we always tell people just sign up, learn about the organization. There are eventually there are voluntary dues. We don't push them. You know, one of our goals is to create an organization that could sustain itself without, you know, these mandatory dues like we've seen in other traditional unions. So, you know, we do a lot through education. We do a lot through benefit administration. But, yeah, there are voluntary dues. But at the end of the day, it's power in numbers. So we tell people, look, just join the organization, get on our list, and volunteer. And that's more important than anything.
All right, Jim, good of you to be with us today. All the best to you and everybody at your organization.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate the time.
Jim Conagliaro with us this morning, who is the founder of the Independent Drivers Guild. Again, you can find them online at drivingguild.org.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening losses on Wall Street a little bit later on this morning. Dow futures are off 89 points. NASDAQ futures are down about 33, almost a half a percent. S&P futures down about a quarter percent. Some developing news this morning. Amazon has announced that it is raising minimum wage to $15 an hour for all U.S. employees, effective November 1st, including full, part-time, temporary, and seasonal workers. The e-commerce and cloud service giant says the new wage will benefit nearly 250,000 employees out of its 575,000-member workforce, as well as 100,000 seasonal employees hired for the holiday season. Let's get an update on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The NAFTA agreement, I guess it's not being called that now, but the agreement over the weekend between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico did put a positive trend on grain and livestock futures yesterday. October live cattle futures ended up 22 cents at $113.67 a pound. Most active December ended up only 10 cents at $118.95, and October hogs ended up $2.57 at $64.75 a hundredweight. Cargill, one of the world's biggest processors of ground beef, said it was important to determine whether the new agreement was better than NAFTA. But the markets reacted as though it was yesterday. Corn and soybean futures rallied after steep losses last Friday. Again, after the agreement was signed, corn up nearly 3%, soybeans up more than 1%, and that gave soybeans a 9.75 cent increase. The December corn contract up 9.5, and the December wheat contract up 1.75. Now let's look at what's happening this week at the Alliant Energy Center in Madison, Wisconsin. The World Dairy Expo in today, number two today. A lot of activity. The International Jersey Show will be held, along with a lot of other activity at the show that goes through Saturday night. We'll be there on Wednesday and hope to see many of you. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a great day as well. A couple more stories before we leave you this morning. All electric vehicles with zero local emissions are among the big stars at the Paris Auto Show, which is underway, rubbing shoulders with the fossil fuel-burning SUVs that many car buyers love. Volkswagen's Audi and Daimler AG's Mercedes-Benz both showing off battery-powered SUVs for affluent customers. Mercedes also has a new, bigger version of its conventional-powered GLE sport utility, while BMW is offering a new version of its X5 SUV that has been a pillar of sales and earnings. The model mix at the show, underlying the contradictions pulling at the industry, the European Union and China are pushing for more electric and hybrid vehicles to reduce greenhouse gases and pollution that harms people's health, while consumers like the SUVs and remain reluctant to buy electric due to cost and range limitations. Also this morning, the situation with China and the United States in terms of trade is still one that we're watching this morning. The Defense Secretary, Jim Mattis, is on a trip to China now, getting to see firsthand, really, how much tension there is there, meeting with his counterparts in that country. There have been calls in recent weeks for more negotiations and talks, but so far that has not materialized between the U.S. and China as tariffs remain in place. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday, October the 10th. Not a lot on the calendar today. We'll see one of the Fed speakers out today, Randall Quarles. We'll also get a look at the Red Book today. Jerome Powell has a speech scheduled for today as well. Lots on the schedule tomorrow with the mortgage applications numbers due out, the ADP employment report ahead of the big jobs report coming on Friday. We'll also get the ISM non-manufacturing index, the PMI service sector index tomorrow. So a lot of data points coming out about the economy tomorrow as we move forward. Just some of the things that could move the markets.